I think it's a very difficult thing to navigate.
The numbers just stacked up and stacked up and stacked up, and that's where we are.
Our system, which is so respected around the world, is actually teetering on the brink.
In early 2021, a joint report from four criminal justice watchdogs found significant delays plaguing access to justice in England and Wales, with 54,000 unheard cases as of the beginning of the year. Some of these cases may not be heard until 2023 or even 2024. As Dominic Raab becomes the 8th Justice Secretary in a decade, the challenge to address the record backlog and fix Britain's broken justice system has never been more acute. In this podcast, our speakers discuss the causes and impact of the backlog and the measures proposed to alleviate them, including reopening Crown courtrooms, expanding the Nightingale temporary court system until March 2022, and modifying 71 courtrooms to hold large multi-hander trials. We begin with Baroness Helena Kennedy QC, Director of the IBA's Human Rights Institute, who talks about the ramifications of the delays for the delivery of justice.
The delays are huge. We're now talking about people waiting for 2 years before they have a trial. And then, of course, witnesses will forget. They won't remember much of their evidence. When they come to court, it will be a rather different account, perhaps, from the one that was in their original statement. People will no longer be available because people will no longer be alive, or they'll have moved to other places. So many of those cases, the justice will not be done. But also it's terrible for accused people as well as for the victims of crime, because they will be waiting in anguish for what's going to happen to them. Sending someone to prison and then waiting for several years for their hearing is really terrible. The cost that is to people emotionally and in mental anguish. And then, of course, the burdens that it places on judges who are having to deal with often people appearing unrepresented, the anger that they have about the ways in which the system is failing them. And so, you know, you get more and more people saying, I don't want to be a judge in a system like that. I don't want to do legal aid cases and to act for people in these dire circumstances. And so you stop having a legal system that you can be proud of. And you end up with the poorest in society not being represented well at all. You also end up with really poorly prepared cases and an absence of expertise. So I am very, very anxious about what's happening. And I strongly endorse those who have come publicly out to say something has to be done. I see judges all the time, and the senior judiciary in the House of Lords, and they talk about their own concerns about the way in which our system, which is so respected around the world, is actually teetering on the brink of really failing. And that is something that should be concerning us all if we care about the rule of law.
Peter Zemiski, a partner in the criminal department at Hickman & Rose Solicitors, discusses the many reasons why the court backlog has become so overwhelming in the UK, and the need for investment to address the problems.
It's not fair to just blame it all on COVID. We were here already. COVID has just really broken the system, but we were teetering on the edge beforehand. So before pre-COVID, it was not uncommon, especially in London where the Crown Courts are busier, for a case to take 9 months to a year to get from the first appearance in the Crown Court to a trial. When a defendant is on bail, of course, there are custody time limits. So if a defendant's in custody, their trial has to be dealt with within a certain time frame. But there was an artificial and, in my view, political imposition of what's called a restriction on sitting days. You may have seen this. Sitting days are the number of days a courtroom can be active, can have trials, can have effective hearings in a Crown Court. And that decision, in my view, was entirely a political one, and it was to cut the costs of running Crown Courts, which are very expensive. They require a lot of staff, they require resources, they require properly funding of judges, court staff, you know, the cost of heating and lighting courts, defence lawyers, et cetera, expenses for jurors, people to look after jury members. It's an expensive business running Crown Court trials. And there was a restriction on the number of sitting days. The restriction was about 15%. So a reduction of about 15% in restriction. And that was, I say, a way of imposing cost-cutting exercise. That resulted in courtrooms across the country sitting empty, and the backlog started to grow. So if you look at the backlog at the start of 2020, it was between 33 and then 37,000 active cases in the Crown Court, which are yet to be heard. And that, of course, the inspectorate now says 55,000, which is a shocking statistic by anyone's measurement. But as I say, that's not all due to COVID. So if we were at 37,000 before COVID, COVID then hit, everything closed down for a few months, and the numbers just stacked up and stacked up and stacked up, and that's where we are. What we actually need is a real and sustained increase of funding of the criminal justice system at all levels. And I mean all levels. I mean, the police need more money. And the CPS need more money. Court system need more money. The probation service need more money. So, you know, they're chronically underfunded at all levels of the criminal justice system. There is a suppression and a deliberate beating down, knocking down of fees, which has led to this sort of perfect storm, as I say. And I accept that it is expensive and is not a popular political choice. But in my view, it's fundamental to a properly functioning democracy that we have a fully and properly resourced justice system, and that impacts on everyone.
Sarah Carnegie, former Director of Strategic Policy at the Crown Prosecution Service and Director of the IBA's Legal Policy and Research Unit, outlines recent efforts to reduce the backlog, including the use of the Nightingale Courts.
Clearly, there have been a number of successes. I know that in Wales, they've reported real successes in bringing down the backlog through the use of Nightingale Courts. But then equally, you know, you've got this real sense of you're only using 10% of court capacity in the main courts, or even in courts where you're having to hold multi-handed trials. So there was a really difficult example, which was in Newport Crown Court, a court that would normally have three rooms doing a seven-handed murder case over 10 weeks, and the entire building was being used with different parts of the process sitting in different rooms. So you'd have a jury in one room, you'd have counsel. So you had this division across the entirety of the court building for one case over 10 weeks. Now that is impressive logistically, but not remotely feasible on an efficiency sense. So I would say there have been some really innovative and impressive efforts made in the context of what is an impossible situation. You know, court buildings are often not appropriate for social distancing. The way in which they have been designed really wasn't particularly COVID friendly at any stage, not even tech friendly, because some of them are very old buildings. So I think it's a very difficult thing to navigate. And the use of the Nightingale Courts, you know, there's mixed reviews on that, but I think there has certainly been, you know, reasonable efforts made to try and bring down the volumes in that context of a real challenge, unprecedented challenge.
Given concerns about the rise in domestic abuse during the COVID-19 pandemic, the Bar Council of England and Wales called in April 2021 for non-means-tested legal aid to be available for all domestic abuse cases. In the context of the case backlog, Sarah Carnegie discusses what other measures are needed to ensure justice in such cases.
I guess you end up in that same argument about how many extra sitting days are needed for the courts to be able to manage the number of cases coming through, whether that's through opening up more courtrooms. Again, you've got the COVID restriction issue, whether that's through use of Nightingale Court provision, or whether in fact you have to devise a prioritisation system. One of the problems with the domestic abuse cases is that quite often the defendant is not in custody. So you don't run up against custody time limits in the same way as you might do in murder cases or other cases where you've got time limits that are set before the trial, you know, for the trial to be able to take place. And cases that aren't within that bracket inevitably take second stage, that they're in the kind of next tier down. I know that rape cases, child abuse cases and others were all seen to be seen as prioritisation cases. And I think domestic violence was allegedly falling in that bracket because of the nature of the victim and the status of the victim. But I'm not sure in practice that happens. So you've got to see a number of changes here. You've got to see court capacity increase to deal with the volume. You've got to see prioritisation happening in terms of case type and limits on how long it should be before that case is heard. And again, what's already been happening is use of remote evidence. So people can give evidence remotely, as they can in child abuse cases and in other cases where, you know, there's vulnerability perceived. And that might create a better environment for a victim to feel confident in order to participate in the process, because a lot of victims drop out. A lot of people decide, actually, this isn't for me, for whatever reason, that the actual system itself is too onerous, or their relationship with the defendant is inevitably very problematic, and they decide not to pursue the allegation. The use of body-worn evidence, body cameras, that was meant to try and help the system work better and bring perpetrators to justice, even if the victim and the complainant refused to attend court. That was meant to overcome that dynamic, so actually you didn't place that enormous burden on the complainant. Again, I'm not sure what the figures look like on that at the moment, but certainly that would have been able to bring some people to court who otherwise would have ended up walking.
Baroness Kennedy recalls the approach taken by some countries to reduce the number of cases in the court system when the pandemic hit.
When they were confronted with COVID, they decided actually to look at their prison system, to empty people, allow many people to basically have their sentences reduced in order to go home and be with their families rather than be cluttering up the prison system. With quite a lot of cases where there were no victims, if you like, where you could say, is it worth prosecuting somebody for shoplifting of minor items of not great value? Is there any point in us doing that? And couldn't you just speak to people about cautions and give reprimands to people and so on? There are ways in which you could really cut through so much of this. Lots of people who have been arrested around drugs offending. I personally am of the view that a lot of drugs offending is actually a public health issue. And many of those people really should be dealt with in ways other than through the court system. You know, until you yourself get drawn into situations that involve the legal system, it's hard to see, why does it matter so much? You know, isn't it just a small number of people who ever come to use it? And then suddenly it comes and bites you and people realise how important it is to have a system that works. Now, the rule of law is always hard to talk about. People think, even the Chinese insist that they operate on a rule of law system. The rule of law isn't just laws that are passed by parliament. The rule of law means it has to be about justice, not just about law. And justice means that people have to be properly represented. It means that they have to have, you know, somebody as good on their side as is on the other side. And so they have to make sure that there aren't these delays and that they can bring witnesses and experts as soon as possible so that there aren't erosions of memory and loss of evidence and ways in which a case is tried fairly. And so people have to be made to see that this is really important. But it's a hard job. And those of us in the system and those of who are lawyers have a duty to be the guardians of the law. And we've got to try and protect it.